You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline Podcast. We record on Wednesday, October 27th, as Virginia Tech prepares for its stretch run of the season, starting with a trip down to Atlanta to face off with Georgia Tech for the first time in 2 years. On episode 203 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, we'll get you set for the matchup with the Yellow Jackets, talk about the Hokies' road-heavy schedule down the final stretch of the season, and see how the Hokies can get their season back on track. All that and much more on episode 203 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you in however you are listening to the Tech Sideline Podcast, whether you're listening archived on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or if you are taking this in on YouTube, live or archived. If you are on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And if you are watching live, drop a comment or question in the chat below for Will and Chris, and Katie will get to those at the end of the show. As always, the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to Blacksburg and one of the best and fastest growing wrestling programs in the country. Go to southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. We finally have our full crew back on set today. Across the way, Will Stewart makes his triumphant return, our founder and general manager. To my left, lead analyst and columnist Chris Coleman at TechSideline.com. In the fourth chair today, it is Katie Adams. She will have her segment in the middle of the show and then get to your YouTube questions at the end. Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes, the best podcast producer in the land. And I'm Jake Lyman, your host. Before we get into the game, want to welcome Will back. Missed the last two podcasts down in Florida.
I wouldn't say I missed it, Bob. That's an Office Space reference,
it is.
Right?
Evan Hughes would get that one.
I get it. I've seen that movie.
Yeah, we had to make him watch it.
Oh, you had to make my parents made me watch that. Probably when I was like, as soon as I was old enough to watch it. How was the trip?
Excellent. Full disclosure: I did not listen to the podcast you guys did. While I was gone, I also owe Katie, I have to listen to a podcast she did, so I just drove and listened to SiriusXM.
I was worried you would have caught, you would have listened to the last two. We said some things you probably wouldn't be okay with. So.
Did you talk about me while I was gone?
Yeah, we did. We were worried you would listen.
I would expect no less.
And then Chris, also a win last night for the Braves in game one. There's an outside shot now. You could see the clinching one.
Outside shot, yeah. Well, I'm glad they're not going to go down, 2-0 heading back to Atlanta, because that would take the luster off of it for sure. And I'm glad I got my tickets when I did, because they're like, Friday night's game is like $1,100 now, the lowest price, and Saturday night's game, the lowest price is like $1,300. Wow. And I got mine for like $650.
Well, so. I'm sure if Atlanta wins tonight, that Saturday one's going to keep going up. If the Braves have a chance to lock it up on Saturday night in Atlanta. Saturday in Atlanta, Hokies will also be down there to face Georgia Tech. First time in 2 years that they're facing the Yellow Jackets, which is kind of weird because they're still in that transition from the triple option with Jeff Collins now in his third year with the program. Going to be a very different team than what the Hokies saw 2 years ago in that blowout down in Atlanta as well.
Yeah, they're just struggling to find a quarterback early in his tenure, which is kind of expected. It's not going to be easy for them. I thought it would take a full 4 or 5 years to transition, because you have to turn over that entire offensive roster. Those offensive linemen had never been taught how to pass block before. The wide receivers had never been taught how to run, route trees. The quarterbacks had never been taught how to pass, basically.
Well, I thought a bigger issue would have been that the offensive linemen were generally smaller.
That's certainly
types.
Part of it, too. It's all those things are issues. Now, in his third year, they've actually made more progress offensively than I thought they would. Where I thought they'd make the most progress under Jeff Collins as a former defensive coordinator would be on the defensive side of the ball. And it looked like early this year that they were making progress, but that their last three games have just been pretty bad. So it's a little bit surprising that their offense is a bit ahead of their defense at this point.
The bright spot for Georgia Tech, a blowout of North Carolina earlier on in the season. But again, like you mentioned, they haven't been a very good team the last couple weeks. Is this kind of last chance? Hokies have lost three in a row, four out of five, and the only win, a 21-10 Richmond game against Richmond. Do you think this is the last chance for the Hokies to kind of get this season back on track, get back to 500?
If you want to make a bowl game, you know, you got to win six games, of course. And there are, what, five games left, so you got to win three of those. And I would say the most likely win would be Duke.
Yep.
Right. The second most likely win would be this Saturday. So if you don't win this one this Saturday, then you got to win three of the last four to make a bowl game against a Miami team that's finally starting to score some points.
They're
short cool. week at BC.
Short week, Friday night, November, Boston. That just doesn't sound good. No.
We were talking earlier about Miami's quarterback that they're playing ever since
Derek King.
Ever since Derek King got hurt, he's really catching up quickly. Yeah. He looked pretty poor the first half he was in, and last week completed something like 75% of his passes, four touchdowns or something like that.
It's crazy the transition during the middle of the season because, you know, you watch him in the first half of that Appalachian State game and you're like, they might not win another game the rest of the year with this guy at quarterback. And yep. he has made huge improvements since then, starting in that second half of that game.
Well, Miami also could have beaten Virginia if they didn't hit a field goal off the upright at the last second as well. Wow. So Miami could be maybe even contending up there with Pitt for the Coastal if a couple other things had gone right. Speaking of Miami, I wrote this down when I was thinking about this game. This game kind of has a feel of that 2019 Miami game after losing to Duke 45-10 the week before. It felt like a lot of people had given up. And then Tech goes out and kind of bounces back. I feel the same way about this one, that Tech is finally going to put it together.
I hope so. Because it'd be another week of talking about the same thing over and over again if they don't. I do think that the way Georgia Tech has been trending down defensively the last few weeks, you know, UVA put up a ton of yards on them, but it wasn't just Brendan Armstrong. UVA actually ran the football on them. I think they ran for 240 yards on them, and UVA has not been able to run the football this year. They are not a good running team. They weren't last year. They're not this year, yet they ran all over Georgia Tech. I think it was like 240 yards and 8 yards a carry. Yep. So that's a bad sign for their defense that they could not stop a team that had yet to be able to run the ball on anybody. Of course, it's also a bad sign for Virginia Tech's defense that they couldn't stop a team from throwing the ball who hadn't shown the ability to pass the ball on anybody before.
Well, they gave up 636 yards to Virginia last week, did Georgia Tech. But on the offensive side, you mentioned the offense may be taking bigger strides than the defense in Jeff Collins' third season, and that's because their freshman backfield. Two highly recruited guys, Jeff Sims and Jahmyr Gibbs. Looking at Sims, we just saw the Hokies struggle with a mobile quarterback against Syracuse, and now you got a guy averaging almost 7 yards per carry. It could be another tough test for the Hokies' defense.
Yeah, I would say so. He's a guy that can certainly run the ball. I think he's got over 300 rushing yards this year, and doesn't say it on here. I'm pretty sure I wrote in my preview that he had over 300 rushing yards.
Right.
Either your roster card is wrong or my preview is wrong.
Well, it's possible. Did you do that thing of looking at the first column where it says how many yards he's gained and you didn't look at that he's lost and then the net? Did you maybe do that?
It's possible.
Yeah.
Someone in this room
I actually have it
can
up
look
right
this,
now.
For, up for us right now.
There are six people in this room. Can somebody please?
I had it up from my researching for this earlier. He has run for 320 yards this season.
Okay.
Hmm.
Yep. All right. So,
I
yeah.
Not see that.
He can run and he's not a great passer yet. Their receivers aren't dynamic, but they're not bad either. But I would say he's probably not as good a runner as Schrader, but he's probably a better passer than Schrader. But yes, he is a guy who he's a dual threat quarterback, and he's going to be able to run. And they've got three backs that they're going to be able to give the ball to. Jahmyr Gibbs was a top 50 recruit coming out of high school, coming out of I believe Dalton, Georgia.
Out of Georgia, right?
They were able to keep him in state. 411 rushing yards this year. He's also caught 21 passes. He's an all-around player. His pass blocking grade is also really good on PFF so far. So it's rarity for a true freshman to be able to come in and pass block at a high level early.
Yeah, so for contrast, we were doing the PFF high graders of the week on offense, and Malcolm may or may not have the numbers up. And for Virginia Tech, it was Caleb Smith this week. He only played about 35% of the snaps, but we gave it to him anyway. But we looked at Malachi Thomas's grades, and his pass blocking grade was in the 30s or something like that. So that's what you run into typically with freshman running backs.
And that's a lot of times fans wonder, oh, why isn't this guy getting on the field more?
Because he'll get the quarterback killed.
Yeah. Now, granted, I think at this point they didn't have much of a choice because Jalen Holston was also getting the quarterback killed. So
you put the guy in who can run.
Yeah, exactly. At that point, so I think they've got some pieces down there at Georgia Tech. I think their offense is good enough for them to be a decent football team. Yeah. But the way their defense is trending the last few weeks, they're like Virginia Tech right now. They need to win ASAP. Their last two games are against Notre Dame and Georgia. So they're not going to win those games. So if they want to make a bowl, they need to start winning. They need to win like three in a row here. They need to run off a few wins in a row. So Virginia Tech needs to win, because if they don't, then you go into those last four games needed to win three of them. And generally speaking, 3-5 football teams don't win three out of four.
So I watched the only time I've been able to watch Georgia Tech play was against North Carolina. And I tuned into that because I think I'd seen the score and I enjoy watching North Carolina lose, so I went over and watched that. And Georgia Tech looked really good in that game. If you look at their, and Chris mentioned this in our preview, that they're not run blocking very well, but if you look at their PFF grades, what you see is kind of a low run blocking grade, not hideous, but not great. But what you see is high running grades for the guys that actually run the football. So that tells you that they've got very talented runners. They're just not blocking particularly well for them. That said, if your linebackers don't fill the holes, it doesn't matter how well they're blocking. They're going to run on you.
Yeah, that's right. And they actually have here's a little bit of trivia. Oh, I hope I don't steal this from Katie. Jalen Griffin plays defensive end for Virginia Tech. His two brothers play for Georgia Tech. One is on the defensive line, Jaquan Griffin. Okay. And the other is Jameis Griffin, who is a running back. I don't know if Jameis will get any carries on Saturday. It's possible, but unlikely. But, they got plenty of guys who can run the football. And I do think if they can get their offensive line up and going a little better in the future, this does have a chance to be a good offense. But like you said, that was probably the biggest turnaround for their entire offense coming on. I mean, it's just you need a completely different type of offensive lineman to run a traditional offense as opposed to the Paul Johnson offense. And you need bigger linemen too. And you can't really change an offensive line on a dime like that, So, I do think they're making strides offensively, but their big problem is defense.
If you look just towards the future of this Georgia Tech team, it seems like this is a team you want to get now with Sims and Gibbs, both true freshmen. And then again, you mentioned the offensive line is going to keep developing into the new system. It seems like this offense could be pretty dangerous a few years down the road.
I think so. I mean, Jeff Sims is a quarterback who decommitted from Florida State to go to Georgia Tech. He was a highly touted kid. That was like a late flip too, like right before signing day. And everybody was like, wow, that Jeff Collins dude can recruit. Yeah. And he has done a solid job, I think. And Jahmyr Gibbs was a big win for him. This is a capable team. I mean, they hammered North Carolina. Carolina had some turnovers, and Georgia Tech took advantage of it. But this is also a team that has also been hammered in their own right. Pitt beat them by 31. I mean, if you think Pitt handled Virginia Tech, they really handled Georgia Tech. Yeah. And the UVA score was not as close as the final score indicated.
Didn't Georgia Tech have a couple late touchdowns?
It was 48-27 with 3 minutes left, and then somehow Georgia Tech scored twice in the last 3 minutes.
They scored, they got an onside kick and scored again, and then I think they got a second onside kick as well. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Katie's nodding, so.
They did.
Wow. Hey, man, how do you give up two onside kicks in a row if you're UVA?
That's rare.
It very rarely happens once in a game, let alone twice within 3 minutes.
I better get my UVA knocks in while I can.
I hear their quarterback's pretty good.
Well, for Sims, he ran for 128 yards in that North Carolina game. That's a season high, and that was a large reason why they won that game. But since that North Carolina game, he's struggled in the air. 5 interceptions in the last 3 games. And against Duke's defense, he went just 12 for 25. So this is a guy that the Hokies, they can contain if they just keep him from running the football.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Very young player still. he's a true freshman, but he's a COVID true freshman because he did start for him last year. So he's a second year player now, but still, he's a second year player who's operating in an offense that is in complete rebuild mode from the biggest systematic change you'll ever see in college football, going from a Paul Johnson offense to a traditional offense. Yep. It was a leap of faith by him to commit there. Like he had to be really. Jeff Collins really did a good sell job, I would say. I think early playing time, I'm sure, had a lot to do with it, and maybe the state of Florida State program probably had something to do with it too.
He's throwing the ball. His two best wide receivers, Kyrick McGowan and Malachi Carter. If Jermaine Waller isn't healthy, or at the very least, if he's limited in this game on Saturday, these guys are both big play threats. McGowan averaging 14 yards per catch, Carter averaging over 15.5 yards per catch. The Hokies gave up a couple big plays in the air against Syracuse. Seems like that could be the MO for the Yellow Jackets as well.
You know, it seems like when the Paul Johnson era, they didn't throw the ball very much. When they did, it generally was for like a 60-yard game. Yeah. Man, yeah, they would pop up on you, and they didn't screw around with little out routes, man. They went for the throat when they did decide to throw it. McGowan's going to be your slot guy, and Malachi Carter is their most dangerous outside receiver. I hope Jermaine Waller is ready to go this week. They tried to play him this past, but they started him in that game. He only played four snaps, and I'm going to go on my rant here about playing injured players.
It's all true. Like,
could you really not tell during pregame warmups that he wasn't going to be physically capable of playing? Yeah. Do you have to throw him out there on the field before you figure that out? Well, what if he'd gotten re-injured? They did the same thing to Khalil Herbert last year and James Mitchell last year. They put him out there for one or two plays, and they're like, oh, hurt, can't play. Why can't you figure that out during pregame warmups? And
or during the week.
Right. And yeah, exactly. Like, because to me, like most football programs, man, like if you get to like Wednesday and you're too hurt to practice, then you can't play. Because that tells other players, oh, you know what? My hamstring's a little sore and I don't really feel like practicing anyway. So I'm just gonna lay out of practice today and the coaches will still let me start on Saturday, right? And that's how you part of the reasons you get bad player development and things like that, and bad discipline in a program. So there's my rant for all of that.
Well, if Jermaine Waller isn't healthy, how does this defense get better from that game against Syracuse? That was their worst performance of the season. How do you bounce back from that and hopefully have a game similar to the ones that we saw earlier in the season where the defense was keeping the team in games?
You know, I don't think Georgia Tech can consistently throw the ball on Virginia Tech, but Syracuse didn't consistently throw the ball on them. They just did it when they had to.
That's what they call gallows
16
humor.
For 34.
Yeah, exactly. 16 of 34, but man, when they needed a big play, they got them. And when they needed to go 98 yards, they did it.
They did it.
Other than those two drives, pass defense was perfectly fine. So to me, it's like, yeah, I don't think Jeff Sims is going to go out there and light Tech up, but when they need to score, is Tech's defense going to come through with a stop? I don't think they're running. I think their running game is good, but I don't think it's as good as the Syracuse running game. I don't think they're going to, on paper, I don't think they should threaten the Tech defense quite as much as Syracuse did, but, you know, on paper, Syracuse shouldn't have been able to throw the ball against Tech. And so you see the defense trending down a bit. You see the defense trending around in a week where Justin Fuente left the scout team offense to actually work with the regular offense. And then the regular offense got better, but the defense got worse. So if we continue to see that trend this week, then probably the final five games of the season are going to be higher scoring than you would have expected from performances earlier.
Well, if it happens again, do you think that's less? It could be a coincidence that happened just the week Justin Fuente moved over.
It could be just a coincidence.
If it happens again and this game finishes 44-41, does it seem like Justin Fuente, wherever he goes, is going to be successful and the other side is just going to fall off
there
a cliff?
There were two Justin Fuentes, one with a scout team offense, one with a regular offense.
We had
a
whole staff of Justin Fuentes. But would you have to pay all of them $4.5 million a year?
Oh, man.
It's true.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you get into the point of the season where you're always going to have that game or two where things don't necessarily work out like you think it's going to work out as far as, oh, here's how the game's going to go. So, like, the Notre Dame game was higher scoring than we expected. The Syracuse game was higher scoring than we expected. Were those just kind of blips, or are we going to see more of a trend of that going forward?
based on what we've heard in press conferences this week, especially from the defensive players, it feels like they have a chip on their shoulder this week after that game where
you would think so, Jake.
You can have a chip all you want, but yeah. you gotta execute your assignments. Yeah. You gotta read the scouting report, you gotta know what's coming.
And you also have to take what players say at a press conference with a grain of salt. Because, you know, last week Dax came out and David, didn't Dax say something last week about he thought he had a great
He thought their Tuesday practice was the best Tuesday practice they had yet.
Yeah.
But then this week he flipped it.
David Teal asked him about it. And he was like, I think you said that last week. Do you feel the same this week? And he was like, yeah. And, I mean, you saw my quote I put in there.
Yeah.
He said that the past couple weeks he was.
David's not mic'd.
Yes.
Folks.
In case you can't hear what David is saying, David Cunningham, managing editor at Tech Sideline, he's saying that last week Dax Holyfield said that their Tuesday practice was the best they've ever had, and then they gave up 41 points to Syracuse. Right. So, again, like you said.
Right. But then it's like Teal asked him about it this week, and then Dax mentioned something like, well, I thought it was good this week, but it hadn't been good in the past. So did he just make that up about the Syracuse practice being good? So like I'm saying, take all that stuff with a grain of salt. No player is going to get out there and say, man, I really feel like we're terrible and we're not making progress and we've been practicing horribly and everything like that. So you just...
And some of it is just what is meant by having a good practice on a player level. Sometimes just being fired up and energetic can be defined as a good practice, whether you're
actually executing
well or not.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying there. Dax Holyfield isn't going to come out and say, man, yesterday was the worst practice we've ever had.
Really terrible. We're not ready to play this week.
We might as well just forfeit it now. We'll move on next week. It does feel that this game is a much better matchup for Virginia Tech than the last couple, at least. It feels like the strengths of what the Hokies do plays into the weaknesses of what Georgia Tech does.
I would say, considering how Georgia Tech's defense has been on a downward trend for 3 weeks and the fact that the Tech running game was improved last week, makes me feel better about this game, for sure.
Yeah, and if Fuente is he said in press conferences he was going to, I think the way he phrased it was, I think I'm going to stay over there.
With the regular
on the offensive side of the ball. And I agree that Virginia Tech has a chance to, if all that lines up, Virginia Tech has a chance to score in the 30s or maybe even the 40s again. I know that sounds preposterous to some people who are really down on the offense, but...
Well, Pitt scored 42 in the first half against this Georgia Tech defense, which, again, Pitt's offense is much better than Virginia Tech's, but 42 and a half is...
That's when Georgia Tech's defense really started on their downward trend.
Yeah.
They beat Duke, but, you know, they didn't play great against them, and then UVA torched them. It's the fact that UVA could run the ball on them.
Yes.
And UVA hasn't been able to run the ball on anybody else, and that's... That should be the really concerning part if you're a Georgia Tech coach, is that UVA, who can't run the ball, just ran it down your throats.
Well, Georgia Tech gave up, again, 52 to Pitt, 48 to UVA, 14 to Clemson. That's pretty high for those Tigers. So
that's a good point.
that was a fun game, I'm sure, to watch. I didn't watch that one. 14-8 the final score for Georgia Tech and Clemson.
I didn't see that one either.
But again, you mentioned UVA's offense is very good, but giving up 636 yards, that you usually don't win many of those games.
Once you start getting over 500 yards, it kind of gets into the ludicrous speed thing from Spaceballs. Have you guys ever seen that?
No.
It gets a little ludicrous once you get over 500. And I mean, 600 and how many
36.
Yards?
636.
Man, that's a ton of offense. You know,
traditional Big 12 game is what it sounds like.
And we've got a few weeks before Virginia, but maybe it does show a little bit of optimism for Hokies fans wanting to keep the Commonwealth Cup in Blacksburg, that UVA put up 636 yards of offense and Georgia Tech had the ball after the second onside kick to go down and
tie
the game.
Yeah,
for sure. And honestly, I look at UVA and I think to beat Virginia Tech, you need to have a good, strong running game to attack Virginia Tech's weakness, which is run defense. And, you need to have not a defense that is terrible, quite frankly. And the thing is, UVA's defense is pretty bad, and outside of the Georgia Tech game, they can't run the ball. So that actually, on paper, they're not a bad matchup for Tech at all.
I feel, though, and I haven't looked up the stats to back this up, I feel that Virginia Tech's ability to pressure the quarterback, which was pretty decent against Syracuse, you got to give them credit for that, in general, has not been real strong. Mm-hmm. Justin Hamilton, to me, has shown to be a guy who doesn't like to to blitz a whole lot. Maybe that'll change as the season goes on. So you sit here and you say that the pass defense is a strength of Tech's defense, one of the strengths of their teams, but you gotta pressure the quarterback. You gotta make it hard on him because he's really good. Anyway, I don't
well,
know
well, pass pass yet. Coverage has been a strength of Virginia Tech's defense, especially when Jermaine Waller is healthy. But it is true that the Hokies' pass rush has been disappointing, I think would be the right term, especially with Jordan Williams coming in and all the expectations for Amari Barno. Haven't really gotten to the quarterback as much as many people would have expected. And then even against Syracuse, you get pressure, but they lost contain and it gets out the side of the pocket and runs for 170 yards on the day.
Yeah. Not good. Yeah.
Now Jordan Williams did. He had the highest pass rush grade of any Tech defensive player all year long against Syracuse. And he was a split second too late on the last one, you know, and you got to give Schrader credit for delivering that
nothing
pass
you can
under
do on
that pressure.
I mean, it was good coverage, good pass rush. Hokies defense just couldn't make the play. Tech defense trying to bounce back from their worst game of the season against Georgia Tech. We're going to dive into the offense and how they can kind of keep that momentum going from the Syracuse game in the second half of the show. But first, let's send it over to Katie Adams in our fourth chair. What you got today, Katie?
So Virginia Tech makes its first ACC road trip this week in week 9 of college football, which is still crazy to say because of this mess of a schedule. Was curious to see what our record is over the past years on that ACC road game debut. So since 2008, we're 10-3 in our first ACC road game of the season. Includes 4-1 during Fuente's tenure, which was kind of a surprise to me because my mind automatically goes to that 2019 BC game, which was a disaster. But we've been decent since 2008.
That's crazy to think that the first ACC road game for Virginia Tech is on Halloween.
It's almost in November, man.
Or the day before Halloween.
You know, I remember being down in Greensboro before the season in one of our little breakaway sessions with Fuente. He asked everybody in the media that was in there. I guess it was Teal and Nizelek and David and you know, everybody like Bitter, all that. And he's like, have you guys ever seen a schedule like this? And everybody was like, not even Teal. Teal's seen it all. He was like, no. No, never seen a schedule like this.
So do you have the list of
I do.
Go down them.
Okay, so 2020, won at Duke. 2019, lost at Boston College. 2018, won at FSU.
Right.
Year before, won at BC. Year before that, won at UNC. 2015, lost at Miami. 2014, won at UNC. And so on. I won't read the whole thing. Yeah. So this game is a toss-up. If that stat keeps up, I'd say that we have a good chance to win. But Georgia Tech has a lot of things going for them. It's their homecoming game. They've alternated wins and losses all season. And they lost last week, so they're due for a win this week.
And so they've won. Literally alternated
wins
and
every
losses.
Week, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss.
We never did give their record. They're 3-4 overall and 2-3 in the ACC, I think. Yeah,
so... But they've won 4 out of the last 6. Okay, trivia-wise, I didn't have anything in the past 2 weeks, but I do today. So if Virginia Tech loses, we move to 3-5 on the year and 1-3 in the ACC. When was the last year that we started on those terms?
3-5.
And 1-3?
It's one of Frank's last year. Well,
Is it?
2018 was rough. See, this is where I don't remember these kind of details very well.
I know we had to win too late, like in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we were 4-5 and not.
I think in 2018 Tech was 4-5 too because I believe
they were. I think they started.
I think they started 4-1.
Wow.
Then lost 4-2. Then lost 4 in a row and then beat Virginia and Marshall to get the bowl streak.
Get to 6-6, right? Yeah.
And I think they won 2 in a row like in 2012 and maybe one of those late Beamer era.
I'm going to totally pull one out here and say 2014.
You had it literally on the money as soon as I said it. It is Frank Beamer's last year. It was 2015 was the last time we started on those terms, ironically, we had a coaching change at the end of that year.
Yikes.
How about that? So we'll see. 2015 was also the last year that both teams had losing records going in. Virginia Tech was 4-5. Georgia Tech was 3-6. Virginia Tech ended up winning 23-21, and that's where that infamous Frank Beamer gorging eyes meme.
Oh, yeah.
Was that where that's from?
No, absolutely. Pete Morris came up to tell him something, and Frank's like, I don't know what this guy's talking about. Yeah, that's from the post-game interview of that game.
Wow.
Yep. So that's it for me.
Perfect. Thank you, Katie. And we'll get back to Katie at the end of the show with YouTube questions. Again, a reminder, if you have a question or comment for Will and Chris, drop it in the YouTube chat and we'll get to those at the very end of the show. We're going to take a break here on episode 203 of the Tech Sideline podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. When we come back, we'll dive into the Hokies offense and see how they can keep that success from Syracuse rolling against the Yellow Jackets this weekend. Stay with us here on episode 203 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back on episode 203 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We are previewing Virginia Tech's trip down to Atlanta to face Georgia Tech this weekend. We've already talked a lot about Georgia Tech's offense. We're going to dive into Virginia Tech's offense and how they can keep their momentum rolling on the first of their four road games in their final five matchups of the season. Again, if you have a question or a comment, drop it in the YouTube chat below. If you are watching live on YouTube, we'll get to those at the very end of the show. Usual Wednesday crew on set. We'll Stewart, Chris Coleman, Katie Adams, Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes, and I'm your host, Jake Lyman. We've kind of looked at the Georgia Tech defense a little bit and their struggles over the last three games, but looking specifically at those linebackers, I know you put in your preview, which is up on techsideline.com right now, that they have been the weakness of the team. Maybe could be another breaking out party for Malachi Thomas in the backfield like he had against Syracuse.
Charlie Thomas has been really, really good, but the other two guys, Quez Jackson and I...
you want me to...
Yes, you.
Ayinde Ale would be my guess.
That would be my guess, too. And they've been awful, like terrible, like...
Give us the numbers, man.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'll look them up and give the numbers. You said that Jackson was in the 40s in his PFF grade, and Ale was like 38. 30s.
And I want to say that it was something like fourth from the bottom out of all college linebackers in grade.
I'm almost there. I'm almost there.
Pretty much as bad as it gets of any linebackers with like 100.
Yeah, so to put that, I'm reading from the game preview. That this is quality podcast content when you're reading from the website. To put that into perspective, only six FBS linebackers have a grade lower than Ale. He ranks number 480 out of 486. Jackson isn't much better at number 426. This rings a bell. I feel like we've in the last couple of years, we've read something similar about somebody, and then they went out and had a decent game. But unfortunately, I can't remember when that was.
We'll see. But, yeah, I mean, that's the issue with Georgia Tech's defense. Their corners are extremely average. Their safeties are okay. But these linebackers are not good, and that's got to be taken advantage of. You've got to find a way to – I don't know if their issue is just, like, getting blown off the ball or they don't have good instincts or, you know, putting men in motion and pulling guards and things like that confuses them. But, you know, you've got to find a way to take advantage of these two dudes because it's there.
Well, some of the if you go back and you look at the Syracuse game, some of the running lanes that Malachi Thomas had were just the linebackers were out to lunch. They were running off in another direction.
You know, Brandon Patterson wrote his article, and the synopsis of his article this week, his video breakdown, was how horrible both run defenses were for different reasons.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, the Syracuse defense, it was just guys just all out of position, just played horribly.
Yep.
Now, Syracuse started two freshman linebackers and a bunch of freshmen in the secondary, you know. So it could be that Tech was doing some things offensively that maybe the Syracuse defenders hadn't seen yet,
yep.
And they were able to take advantage of that. So these guys are more experienced. They're juniors, so you would think they would be better at this point.
And for Malachi Thomas, we talked about him a lot after the Syracuse game. Seems to be kind of the bright spot for the Hokies right now. 150 yards and three touchdowns in his first significant action in the backfield. Could be just a game where he can continue that momentum and the entire offense that struggled early on in the season.
Malachi Thomas should have a large contingent of family and friends because he's from Georgia. So it's kind of a homecoming for him. I think he's going to get plenty of work. I think it's just going to be him and Blackshear. You know, the thing is, like, Holston's from Georgia too. So are they going to be like, we feel like we need to play the senior who's from Georgia and everything like that? So we'll see how that works. But, you know, on paper, man, you should be able to run the ball on this defense with any of those guys.
So I didn't get a chance to talk about the Syracuse game, but and I'm sure this got covered. I know a lot of people said the same, that Malachi Thomas looked – it reminded people of Lee Suggs running in those old uniforms and the running style. I remember watching Lee Suggs as a – I think he was a redshirt freshman. He got into a couple games late and didn't look like anything special. You know, he was – I remember him being fairly easy to tackle. One guy got his hands on him and down he went. And then, of course, you know, you guys never saw him play. He became a guy that I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody hit the hole faster. Now, the offenses were different back then. I don't think there was any zone blocking. It was all drive blocking and conventional handoffs from under center. But that guy hit the line really fast. And then when he got behind you, he ran away from you. He was an extremely fast runner. So Thomas... And I said this in my article on Monday, you know, he got behind the defense that one time and got run down from behind, and that never would have happened to Lee Suggs. But I think there's a lot of potential there for the guy. I saw some of the same thing where he did some really good things. He ran physically, but he just wasn't quite strong enough or mature enough yet to break a tackle, and maybe later he will be able to.
I thought he showed good vision, especially on his long touchdown run.
Yeah.
So I was impressed with him. Showed good natural ability. You got to be careful because, you know, he's listed at 6 foot 197, but he looks more like 187 or 185. He does not look 197.
Yeah, that was kind of odd. When I looked him up, because I looked him up, and Suggs was 6'0", 201 as a senior, and Thomas is listed at 6'0", 197.
They don't look the same at all.
Yeah.
No. So you got to be careful. Like, that was a freshman laden Syracuse defense. So those are guys his age.
Right.
For the rest of the season, he's going to be facing guys who have been in college weight rooms for 2 or 3 years. You know, there's going to be a more physical presence there.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can give him 21 carries a game for the rest of the season and expect him to not feel it to a certain extent. So that's something for the coaching staff to manage, though.
And only two freshmen on Georgia Tech starting defense. Jared Ivey up front has been good. We'll get to him.
Yeah.
I do want to – you mentioned the throwback uniforms. Well, we never got your thoughts on those and the throwback day in Lane. What were your thoughts on the uniforms?
I thought there was some really cool stuff. The uniforms look cool. They were almost exact replicas of what they wore back in 99, 2000, around that era. And, you know, I think they should wear them all the time.
Me too. Yep.
You know, why not? They'd need to, I said this in my article, they would need to order an orange set and a white set.
And a white
set,
one.
You know, and then just start
mixing and matching.
Yeah. But I thought one of the, and this is one of the things that disappointed me about not being able to be there, was what they did with Hokie Vision, where they mocked it up to look like the old 1999 scoreboard or 2000 or whatever they were going for there.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
Now, I did say, I don't know what it was like to be there in person, but I did say in my article Monday that, I was able to pull up a pirated stream on my phone and watch it. And I thought the crowd sounded really good. I thought they were into it.
Crowd did fine. Yeah.
How was it being there?
It was good. I think the crowd was better than Pitt, at least in terms of staying long.
Engaged.
The student section, it did clear out pretty significantly by the end of the game, but not as much as Pitt, where after halftime,
there's nobody there.
You could count them on both hands.
So if you have or haven't seen this on Twitter, I don't know why I decided to look this up, but I think why I decided to look it up was because I was a little surprised by the attendance at the game last week and at the Syracuse game. I thought it was pretty good, and that wound up being 57,000 and something.
Yeah.
So through six home games so far this year, Tech has averaged 59,062 fans.
Which is two sellouts.
Yeah, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah.
Last year they averaged 58,293 in seven home games. So far, with your two biggest draws being North Carolina and Notre Dame, you know, you're still slightly ahead of last year.
They've bumped up that average quite a bit. And now you worry about next year because there's no big home opponent that is going to sell.
West Virginia.
West Virginia could.
Yeah, but just the rest of this year.
It seems like our fan base just is not very interested in playing West Virginia, though.
Well, UVA is at home next year, but that's always a tough one.
It's right after
either the day or two days after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't think that one really moves the needle.
I don't think it does either. I think the UNC one did because first game of the season, first home game since 2019,
right,
against the top 10 team, and everybody was really excited. And then Notre Dame is Notre Dame.
Yeah. So, you know, and then And they have not announced the time of the Duke game yet, correct?
That'll be on Monday, I believe.
I'm betting that one's going to be an early game, you know. And so I think that's going to drag attendance for this year down below last year, but 2019, excuse me, not last year, 2019. Yeah. But not by a lot. So going back to, let's go 2015 through 2018, 60,800, 63,000, 63,200, 59,600. And then last 2019 was 58,293, and this year's 59,062. So my point being, the fans are hanging in there so far.
You think that Duke game might drag that average down a little bit, especially if things don't go well over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I want to jump back to Georgia Tech's defense. We talked a lot about their weaknesses. Linebackers and the secondary is kind of meh, but the defensive line is pretty good. Mentioned Jared Ivey, the freshman up front, another good young piece for them.
Yeah, and Demond Brooks has been good at defensive tackle. He's not your traditional like nose guard size or anything like that, but he's been a good player for him. It is really surprising to me that, you know, their linebackers have been that bad. It's a beatable defense for sure. And it's one of those games where if you come out and you look like you looked against Syracuse, then you're going to have success. And, I think this game will be decided by which Virginia Tech defense shows up. Is it going to be the Syracuse defense, or is it going to be the defense played against West Virginia and North Carolina and all those other games? I think that's what will ultimately decide.
And if it comes down to an end-of-game situation, can the defense hold up?
Right.
You know, they haven't been able to do that. Well, they did against Carolina.
And West Virginia as well. They made the play to put the Hokies in the game, but Notre Dame and Syracuse defense couldn't make stops four total times, I guess, would be twice against Notre Dame.
It
twice
took two drives. It was a double-digit or two-score lead in both games?
It was 8 points against Notre Dame.
Okay.
But then they gave up the field goal at the end of regulation.
Right.
Yeah, so it's three touchdowns and a field goal in the four game-ending drives that Notre Dame and then Syracuse have had.
Right.
So for the offense, we've been talking about Malachi Thomas in the running game, and obviously that's what led the way against Syracuse. Passing game was still a little bit suspect. They schemed up some plays like the Dulius touchdown, but for the most part, the passing game was a little lackluster again. How do they open that up?
Don't know.
make some changes in the month of December. that's how the passing game is better,
be patient.
To be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. So I don't know. I'd run Malachi Thomas a lot. I heard what Chris said, but you know they had the plan earlier in the year where they went with Blackshear and Holston, and they were the 1-2 guys, and they'd bring somebody else in occasionally. I don't know. I'd lean on Malachi Thomas a little bit and see what happens. Because if something unfortunate happens there, you've still got the other two guys you've been using all year.
Well, Blackshear did average more yards per carry than Thomas in that game.
Yeah, he had a really good game.
Both averaged over 7 yards per carry.
Blackshear also had the 20-30 yard reception, something like that. So he was over 100 total yards.
Yeah.
That's the most you can really ask for out of a two running back rotation. Both guys are over 100 total yards. That's very impressive.
Well, the offense did look good, we talked about your game picks from last week for Syracuse. None of you had all that much confidence in the offense.
Nope.
If the defense can get back to the way they were before and the offense keeps this trend going, could this be a team that can get a few wins down the stretch?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we've been saying for a few weeks now that the rest of the season just kind of looks like a bunch of 50-50 games.
Yep.
And this is a 50-50 game. And, you know, if the defense gets back to the way it was before and Dracovic isn't back for Boston College, then that might be a 50-50 game. You know, who knows what Miami team's going to show up. I could see Miami like stomping Tech, and I could also see Tech winning.
Yep.
You know, Tech should beat Duke. Should beat Duke.
Yep.
And like I said, like the matchups are actually there in the UVA game, even though they have the best record out of all the teams remaining on Tech's schedule. Some of the matchups. It was just like last year. I mean, it didn't look like Tech was going to beat UVA last year. Just don't, you know, going into that
game.
But
they handled them pretty easily.
But UVA could not run them. UVA had a terrible running game last year, and their defense was terrible. All they had is Brendan Armstrong throwing the football. And that matched up well for Virginia Tech. And it's kind of the same thing this year for UVA, except they are better this year. But they're 6-2, but at the same time, you know, they could be 4-4 because the two teams missed last second field goals against them, you know.
Louisville and Miami, is that right?
Right. Yeah. So there's not as much separating those two teams, Virginia Tech and UVA, as you would think. So, yes, it is possible for Virginia Tech to close this season strong. They're going to have to start playing in the last 2 minutes of games. They're going to have to show mental toughness and lock in on their assignments and not miss coverage calls and coverage adjustments and things like that. We sit here and say it's a different thing every week, and it does kind of seem that way. And so, like, what's it going to be this week, right? So you that's where you are kind of as a Tech fan right now. You're like, oh, Notre Dame gets the ball back, and you're like, well, I don't know how they're going to do this, but they're going to do it.
They're going to find a way.
Yeah. So
I've been harping on the fourth down stat, you know, for those of you that haven't read me or read me say this in articles or say it on Twitter. Virginia Tech has given up 12 of 15 fourth downs this year, including 10 of 12 against Power 5 competition. And the Hokies are 2 of 8 on fourth down.
I think we referenced these in Monday's podcast.
We did.
Yeah, so you can, you know, I don't quite, sorry, have the breakdown in my head. It's pretty easy against Syracuse. Stop them on fourth down, you win the game. Mm-hmm. There's another game in the past where Tech had just picked up West Virginia. Just pick up a touchdown on fourth down. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's funny that you can. I'm like a dog with a bone with that stat now. I'm like, see, that describes the whole season.
Well, and I wanted to bring up like the law of averages here with 12 of 15 fourth downs given up, 2 of 8 converted.
I don't think that applies.
Well, I just in general, the 50-50 games we talk about, North Carolina, West Virginia, Notre Dame, and we'll say Syracuse, Tech had the lead or had a chance to take the lead late in all of those games and only won one of them. So you would think maybe if these start to come down to late game situations over the last five games, maybe the Hokies finally start to put it together.
You know, I called my article on Sunday the 1992 feeling when Virginia Tech went 2-8-1 and they led, was it 6 or 7 of those losses in the fourth quarter?
7, I believe.
7. So imagine. I mean, that you're so close, yet at the same time, you are who your record says you are.
Yes. Well, the statistic, and this comes from Bill Roth wrote, which, that's almost 30 years ago, and it's stuck in my head. He wrote after the season that if football games were 55 minutes long, Tech would have been 7-4. Mm-hmm. So that kind of describes that season. It's the margin of error is razor thin. One of the things that I thought was, or that I noticed about the Syracuse loss was that game-winning touchdown. You know, Dorian Strong played that pass the way you're supposed to play it, right down to he got his hand in between the receiver's hands. And I remember the 2016 Battle at Bristol game where Tennessee chucked a ball in the back of the end zone and scored over Greg Stroman. Stroman had his hand outside the receiver's hands, so the receiver's like this and Stroman's hand is here or there. You can't break that up. Mm-hmm. You see the picture of Dorian Strong. I can't remember the name of the Syracuse player that caught the football.
Damian Alford.
Alford's got it like this, and Strong's hand is in between, and you're just like, how did he not make that play?
He's just got to get stronger. That's honestly, that's the thing. You've just got to be
strong.
His
dad can help with that.
His dad can help with that if Dorian's willing to listen, for sure.
Well, that is the kind of the story of the Hokies season, that play against Syracuse. Jordan Williams is a split second late from making that a duck thrown 20 yards downfield, and Dorian Strong is an inch from making that an incomplete pass, but instead it's a 40-yard touchdown.
So, but the big thing is, I think, and Fuente said this after the game and on Tech Talk Live, that he thinks that's the first time in his coaching career that an opposing team has returned a kickoff to the 50-yard line. So of all the times for it to happen, it doesn't happen in some random blowout of some FBS, FCS team or something. It happens
when you go up by 9.
I read that in a Teal article. That's the long – I think he researched it. And that is the longest kickoff return against Justin Fuente in his 10 years of being
right,
a head coach.
Right, so that's what I'm saying.
That kind of stuff drives you crazy.
That's what I'm saying. All right, it's something different every week at this point.
And hence the level of frustration.
Correct. So what will it be against Georgia Tech?
Right.
So Virginia Tech, all right, they could go out there and get back to their old defensive ways and continue to play pretty decent offense. What if they go out there and get a punt blocked? You know, it'd be something new, you know? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but would you be surprised if it did? It just doesn't seem like this team has it.
I will say that that long touchdown pass by Syracuse didn't surprise me a bit.
Well, you know, the thing is, and that's the thing, statistically it should have I mean, did you read my big time throw stats?
Yes, it never should have happened.
I know. Well, exactly.
I know in the NFL they have the Amazon next gen stats, and it shows you the completion percentage, like how likely is this pass to being completed. I want to know what it was.
Oh
for
God,
that pass.
Yeah,
I bet it was like 1%.
I like in baseball games where catch probability for outfielders. Yes. So you know if you're a really good outfielder, it's like okay, your average major league outfielder, he's playing at this depth. And the ball is hit at this angle, and it's coming off the bat at this speed. And he has a 27%. Your average major league outfielder has a 27% chance to make that catch. So when somebody does make a catch like that, it's generally like a Gold Glove outfielder with great range. Yeah. So I would have loved for like a stat to pop up and say, "Yeah, this is like a 6.2% chance of this pass being completed." You know.
Well, you know, it gets back to Tyler Buchner throwing that incredible pass, which kind of Tech was up 10-0. Am I remembering that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
they took Cone out, put Buchner in, and one of the first things he does is throw a pass he probably hadn't thrown all year and won't throw.
And the 2-point conversion as well. Rolling right, throwing it back over the middle, and guy goes up and makes the play.
But eventually, it's not you, it's me.
Right. Exactly.
It's something I'm doing.
Yeah.
I do wish they had those stats for college, because I know like the Hail Murray last year with Kyler Murray throwing a touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins on the last play. I think it was like 11 or 12% chance that pass was completed. I would want to know what the completion percentage on that pass was.
So watching the baseball game last night, again, I wasn't actually watching it. It was just on. And I don't remember even which batter did this, but he hit the ball off the wall about this close to the top of the wall.
Oh, yeah. That was Gurriel, I think, towards the end. That was the eighth inning. Yeah.
And who was doing play-by-play?
That was Joe Buck and John Smoltz.
I thought it was Buck. Buck said, "We're told that would have been a home run in 28 stadiums in Major League Baseball, but not this one."
Yep.
That's good stuff.
I got to say, Joe Buck, that dude, the next week and a half, his life is crazy. He's doing baseball yesterday and tonight. Then he has football Thursday, baseball Friday, Saturday, football Sunday, baseball Monday and Tuesday.
So who will call the baseball game Sunday?
Actually, you know what? I bet they'll put somebody else on the football game for that, because he's not going to miss the World Series for a regular season football game. But it's, I believe, 7 straight days where he's either calling World Series
NFL games. I don't think your average person can imagine the amount of research you have to put in on every one of those games. Now, I guess once you get deeper into the World Series, you've already done all your research already, so you don't have to do new stuff for each game, but...
Since we're geeking out about announcers, when I went to dinner down in Delray Beach, Florida, one night we went out. We were kind of in the outside seating area. We go and we're walking to our table, and there's a table of four with a guy kind of sitting as the fifth at the table of four. And I just kind of glanced at him. He was looking at his phone. I sat down, and he was over my right shoulder. And my brother-in-law, who was sitting next to me, texted and said, "That's Jim Gray sitting right behind you." And sent me a picture of him so I would know who he is. Look up Jim Gray, TV announcer. He has interviewed 10 presidents.
Wow.
My brother-in-law actually can't stand him, because it goes back to, I don't remember the exact, again, I'm not a baseball guy, I don't remember the exact story, but Pete Rose was at, I believe, an All-Star game long after he'd been drummed out of baseball and had been accused of betting on games. And there was evidence that, evidence in air quotes, again, I don't know the history of it. A lot of people will know the exact history of the Pete Rose story. But years had passed, and they had Pete Rose back at apparently an All-Star game, and they actually honored him. And Jim Gray interviewed him during a break and basically said repeatedly, "Can't you just admit to it? There's all this evidence." It was very awkward.
Right.
And this is an interview that's probably... maybe 20, 30 years old. I don't know. But my brother-in-law can't stand Jim Gray for that reason. That on a night when he should have just let it go, he couldn't. And he felt like he had to grandstand and pin Pete Rose down right there on the spot. So I don't know if this is creating any sort of traffic in the YouTube.
It might be. We'll have to check with Katie in a few minutes here. So we made our baseball tangent. There is game 2 of the World Series tonight, Astros, right. Braves. Chris will be tuned in, I'm sure, seeing if his Braves can go to 2-0. We didn't do keys to the game last week. We just said the Hokies need to score points.
They need to score more points.
That did not work out.
Nope.
So I want to do it this week. What do the Hokies have to do down in Atlanta to pull out the win against the Yellow Jackets?
Well, I think it comes down to the running game.
Yeah.
If, you know, Chris detailed how Georgia Tech's linebackers are struggling. So are Virginia Tech's.
Yeah.
Which set of linebackers is going to play better?
Yeah.
Listen to the discussion earlier. I for some reason I don't feel good about Virginia Tech stopping Georgia Tech being very effective against them. It may be because the only time I watched Georgia Tech, they were blowing out North Carolina, you know. And I do. I think Jeff Sims is an excellent athlete, and I think their running backs are good. And it gets back to what I said earlier about their run blocking hadn't been that great, but the runners are very talented. They're doing their job. So I don't feel good about Virginia Tech's chances for stopping the run game. But if they, by the same token, if they can twist around those Georgia Tech linebackers the way they did the Syracuse linebackers, this could be it's hard to have a shootout per se when it's two teams running the ball a lot. But, you know, 41-36 qualifies as a shootout for Virginia Tech. It doesn't have to be in the 50s. That was a very high-scoring game. And I've so keys to the game, it's who's going to stop the run, do a better job of stopping the run.
Yep, that's exactly it. I think if – obviously, if Virginia Tech can't run the football, how are they going to score? Right? So they have to run the football. And, you know, you could probably say the same to a certain extent about Georgia Tech.
Except they'll – make a few big time throws, you know, if things stick according to pattern.
So, yeah, that's very simple this week, I think. Whichever team does a decent job stopping the run, they'll win the game. No, if neither team does a decent job stopping the run,
it'll just,
be back and forth.
And it'll come down to turnovers and special teams and stuff like that.
Kickoff return.
And pulling some play out of your butt or something like that.
Well, let's jump into game picks. Last week, you guys all had it as a low scoring Syracuse win. It was high scoring, but Syracuse did come out on top. If we're tracking the record so far, Chris and Will at 4-3. David, the only one to jump away from the trend in the Notre Dame game, and he's 5-2.
I'll be honest here. I picked Virginia Tech this week because I'm trying to get
catch David.
I didn't think he would pick Virginia Tech this week, but he did. So there's no way I can catch up to David this week because we had the same picks.
Nah.
But that's not really why I picked Tech. Honestly, I don't know why. It's one of those games where you feel like it's going to be a 50-50 game again. And my gut feel? I don't even know if it's my gut feel. I don't know at this point. We're due, I guess. Here's the score.
I knew before I read what you'd written for the preview that I was going to pick Virginia Tech to win.
Did you really?
Just a gut feel.
Now,
the one thing I did want to know was, and I researched this a little bit, and that's how I know, even though I haven't had a chance to read much this week, I know that Fuente said, I'm going to spend some more time over there with you.
Yeah.
I was like, if he said at any point this week he's going to continue to coach the offense, I'm going to pick Virginia Tech.
Yep. And he did. So, I guess, I don't know. Maybe we should start doing like a confidence meter next to each one of our picks. Like, I'm picking Virginia Tech this week. My confidence meter on that is like a 2. Because I really think it's a 50-50 game. And if I had picked Georgia Tech, it would also be confidence meter 2.
2.
50-50.
Chris has the Hokies winning 30-27 over the Yellow Jackets and getting back to 500. Will, I know you've got very high scoring for your prediction.
Yes, 38-34 Virginia Tech over Georgia Tech. I wrote that down, then I tried to lower it, and then I was like, don't be a pansy, jack it up. You know? who have you said, Chris and David so far?
I just said Chris. David, 32-30 he has the Hokies. So all of you guys
32.
In lockstep again.
How do you get to 32? Remember, he's not mic'd, so we have to repeat what he says.
Six field goals and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's right. Now, how did we get 32?
They had the 2-point conversion.
That's
so that probably messed it up.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll return another block extra point for 2 points.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to make sense. It'll be
no, it doesn't. 32-30 is the score that David is picking. The fans, they're tied up top with David at 5-2. They got it right last week. Syracuse by 1-10. It was very close last week, actually. I believe 36% had Syracuse by 1-10. And 34% had Hokies by 1-10. So close there and close again this week. Right now, the Hokies are in the lead, though. I believe this.
Yeah, so what I'm showing is 53% of fans think Virginia Tech will win, and 47% think Georgia Tech will win. There's a big cluster in the middle of fans saying Virginia Tech's going to win by 1-10 or Georgia Tech's going to win by 1-10. So the fans think it'll be close, and they didn't seem to really think that last week. A quarter of the fans thought Syracuse was going to win by 2 scores.
And right now, I'm showing 475 total voters at this point. Usually, these will be about triple that, right around 1,500. Yeah. But the Hokies currently just 6 votes up on Georgia Tech, so a close one. So we'll have to see how that one pans out before game time on Saturday.
So it kind of reflects the feeling of it being a 50-50 game. I think, Chris, I didn't look at the top of the preview. Is Georgia Tech favored by 4? Did I read that?
4. Yeah. It opened pretty much as a pick 'em.
It did, and it's funny. I looked at the site we use, and and one of the columns still had it as a pick 'em, but all the others had Georgia Tech by 4 or 4.5. Mm-hmm. And I thought was interesting is that the over-under is around mid-50s. And I think it's going to be – I think you should bet the over.
Yeah, considering the Georgia Tech defense is trending down and the Tech offense trended up this past week, it would seem like
– yeah.
Sometimes it takes Vegas a few weeks to catch up to things like that. Right. So might be the week to jump in. Maybe I'll try to jump in and get the over and – see if I can pay for your
Braves.
Again, sadly, you can't living in Virginia, but you will be in Georgia, so you may be able to. I'm not sure what the betting laws are like in Georgia, but I know in Virginia you can't bet on Virginia colleges.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't present you the option when you're on the apps or
so
whatever.
So maybe Chris will find a loophole or something on his travels down to Atlanta. Well, now I think a good time to talk to the fans in the YouTube chat. Katie, anything good getting put down there today?
Yeah, Bill Eschbaugh asks, is there any chance that being away from Blacksburg will be good for the team? Didn't go so great at West Virginia, but maybe being away from the noise and negativity will give them a lift.
If they stay off social media. Yeah. I think it not being in the environment will help. But if you get on social media, then you're right back in it.
You're right back in it. Yeah, the world's a lot smaller these days. Now, as far as just road versus home, I ran some numbers. I think I put them in my preview this week. Can you pull it up? I've got it right here.
So over the last 4 seasons at home against Power 5 teams, Virginia Tech is 8-10, mm-hmm. including 1-3 this year. Yeah. And then on the road against Power 5 teams over the same 4 years, 7-8. So
right.
About the same win percentage.
Yeah, exactly.
And Frank's last 4 years, they were way better on the road than they were at home. It wasn't even close. Yeah, that's close. It's pretty much.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm not worried about whether it's home or away or anything like that. That just doesn't seem to matter anymore. But I don't. It's not good for their psyche when they're on the sideline at the end of a game and they're hearing the North End Zone chant "Fire Fuente."
Yeah,
that's not good at all.
Well, and the last 4 games all at home, and I think obviously the last 3 losses, and the Richmond game disappointing. So really, 4 bad results for Virginia Tech in a row inside Lane Stadium. Maybe the change of scenery is going to help.
Yeah, and I don't know how big of a factor this is, but when you're on the road, you're also not dealing with – for the most part, you're not dealing with tickets for family, unless you're from down there, and then you're really dealing with it. But you're also not dealing with recruiting visits or anything like that. The players don't have to host anybody. The coaches don't have to – so that's a load that's taken off their mind when you're on the road.
Scott Glessner asks, is Virginia Tech being coached to play scared? I feel Burmeister is hesitant to throw, to not turn the ball over. Jaham is hesitant to blitz and game plan to run the play clock down before snapping, though a few penalties and turnovers.
I never expected Jaham to like be as aggressive as Bud Foster with his blitzing. All right, so Justin Hamilton, he only played defensive for Virginia Tech for 1 year. His redshirt senior season.
And was it defense that he played in the NFL? He was a safety?
Yeah.
For what that's worth.
For in the Bill Belichick, Nick Saban scheme. So he spent more years in a different scheme as a player, you know, than he had in Bud Foster's scheme. So, and then he spent a year or two as a coach under Bud. But he's had just as much, if not more, time in other defenses than he had in Bud. So they have a different philosophy. I don't think necessarily not blitzing means you're scared. I do think there's something to be said for maybe Virginia Tech quarterbacks sometimes being scared to make a mistake. But at the same time, like, Burmeister's, he doesn't have the arm to thread the needle. They're very low percentage plays if he just tried to fit in there between a safety and a linebacker. I mean, just that's not the type of arm he has. You have to scheme guys open for him. And guys have to make plays on the ball and things like that. So, I mean, I think it You know, we did hear a story back earlier in the season about how he technically didn't make the right read when he hit Drake Dulius on that wheel route down the sideline against West Virginia.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Cornelson got on him for that because it wasn't the right read. And if that's true, then that will make you hesitate for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
So things like that will make you hesitate.
Yeah, and I don't know that I can really add a whole lot to that other than to say, you know, that we're not there every week. We don't hear what the coaches say to the players and really have a good idea of what the culture of the program is from that respect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't know if it's a positive or a negative, but certainly Braxton Burmeister, far from Ryan Willis's scared money don't make money.
right.
Ryan Willis just came out and said it.
All right, we'll do one more. I think I know the answer to, or Will's answer to this question, but Mitchell Morgan says, since this season is just too depressing, which prospect slash commit are you all most excited about seeing play next year?
Next year?
Oh, man.
So it's interesting. I don't know that you would exactly know my answer to this. There's a little nuance to it. Clearly, it's Alex Orgy.
Yeah.
He Stame interviewed him, and he said he wants to come in January, right?
Yep.
Regardless of who your coaching staff is next year, I'm taking Taj Bullock and Alex Orgy out on the field in the spring, and I'm saying it's between you two guys. Now, coaches will be cute, and they won't even announce it till the week before they play an actual game in the fall. But I would say, all right, let's say Tech at least has a new offensive staff next year, which...
At the very least.
Yeah. Even if the head coach doesn't change, let's say the offensive staff changes... I'd say, you know, it's between you two guys. I'm going to hitch my wagon to one of you. And, you know, there's a lot of Alex Orgy highlights floating around on Twitter that are pretty awesome. He looks like an excellent physical talent. Yeah. I don't remember my Taj Bullock highlights. It's been a while since
he's a good prospect.
Yeah. You know, yeah. So I'd throw down the gauntlet for those two guys and say it's two of you. Go at it.
And the thing is, like Kadem – is he's got more of an FCS arm than an FBS arm, excuse me. And so I don't really feel like he's a legitimate contender for the job. We don't even know if Burmeister will come back. Next year will be his sixth year. Yeah. Some of those guys will take their COVID year, and some of them won't. We just don't know.
I think I'm assuming Burmeister's not going to come
right,
back.
Right. I would probably make that assumption too. It's one of those things. All right. I'm agreeing with Will here. Now the thing is, like, I don't know that we'll get to see Orgy play next year if he redshirted or anything like
that. Or if he stays committed.
Yeah, exactly. Because if there is a head coaching change, I mean, if I'm one of the, I mean, I think that guy's got some serious arm talent, and I think he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I'm swooping right in there, and with everything that's going on at Virginia Tech right now. So we'll see. I will say that, like, if something does happen with Fuente and there is a new head coach. If I'm that new head coach, then one of the first calls I'd make after I got that job would be to Alex Orgy and try to keep him committed.
You got to sell him. Here's what we're going
to
do.
And I would also go out and try to find a quarterback on the transfer portal immediately and give yourself another option, because I don't want my two options to be true freshman Alex Orgy and redshirt freshman Taj Bullock. Yeah.
So anyway, you.
So if a guy like Spencer Rattler is out there in the transfer portal,
oh no,
I'm not sure you want that.
I don't know if that's a fit for Virginia Tech. We'll see.
I do.
Is there okay? So y'all need to clarify, because I bet y'all follow the entirety of college football closer than I do.
So Spencer Rattler got benched at Oklahoma.
That I know,
for freshman Caleb Williams. I want to say
Fields
Williams. Caleb Williams is now the starter at Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler, I believe most people were mocking him as a top five draft pick entering the season, but he was not good. I've seen clips of him from high school being a little bit egotistical, a little bit me before the team kind of stuff. I don't believe he would be a good fit.
Probably not, but you know, I'm just throwing a name out there.
Yeah.
Brewer's brother, maybe something like Charlie Brewer.
But to clarify my answer a little bit more, though, the question was specifically next season. So
yes.
The coaching staff says it's one of you two guys, and you're going to start next fall, and I don't care how bad it is, you're going to learn on the job, and we'll just get better as time goes on.
Assuming this recruiting class is intact for next year, which obviously is a big if, we'll get practice access to whenever in the spring or August.
Probably a day in the spring.
The first person I'll go watch is Orgy.
Yeah. I can't wait to see that. We were watching some highlights the other day. what was he throwing at 65 yards in the air?
Nuts. Oh, I mean, just on the run too.
One to the right side, 65 yards in the air. Another one to the left side, 65 yards in the air.
Well, definitely going to be interesting to see if he makes it to Blacksburg, but that's the hope and could be the quarterback of the future for the Hokies, yeah, which
absolutely.
The hope that the fan base, I think, needs at this point. You said that's it over there, Katie?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for going through those, and thank you to everybody who dropped a comment or question in the YouTube chat. Preview is already up on TechSideline.com. Anything else coming up over the next few days, Chris?
Yeah. I've already started working on a Friday Q&A, which Will is going to run on Friday when I'm gone. I'm probably not an inside the numbers this week because I just not very many pretty numbers to analyze anymore.
I'm just telling him you're going to the World Series.
That's yes. True. Yeah. Forgive me. I'm sorry.
Enjoy the trip down there. Hopefully Braves win tonight and then maybe you get a chance to see it finished off on Saturday.
Probably. We'll see. I don't know. I'd hate losing Charlie Morton, but anyway.
Yes. That was impressive. He pitched, what, 16 pitches on a broken leg?
16 pitches, got three guys out on a broken leg.
Unbelievable. All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 203 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, looking at the Virginia Tech's trip down to Atlanta to face Georgia Tech this weekend, trying to get back on track. Want to thank everybody on set. Will Stewart across the way, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com. You can find him at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman to my left, lead analyst and columnist for Tech Sideline, at Chris Coleman TSL on Twitter. Katie Adams in the fourth chair, at Katie 6 Adams, does a great job with her middle segment, and then also the YouTube questions, and then Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes always does a great job. I'm your host, Jake Lyman, signing off. Enjoy the game, Hokies fans. We'll talk to you next week.